The following is presented by the Cheeky Bastards.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfuckers, and welcome to the 12th edition of Dropping of Bruce, the monthly podcast where we watch every single one of Bruce Willis's 40 direct-to-DVD releases from his acting career to see if he took the role for a paycheck and dropped a deuce, or if, in fact, he took the role and gave it his all and dropped a Bruce. I am the Notorious Scott K.
And my name is Steve, but you can call me Mr. Smith.
And together, we will be your hapless stewards on this 40-month journey through the lesser-known movies of Mr. Bruce Willis's filmography. This month's stop finds us at the end of our season one journey as we review 2018's American action thriller, Acts of Violence. What better way to say goodbye to the Valentine's Day season than with another brotherly love, Acts of Violence. A little sex trafficking, maybe some almost incestual relationships, and some bullets. So, hey, welcome into the final episode of season one. Mr. Smith, we fucking made it through the first of a 3.5 year journey with 2.5 to go.
A miracle in itself.
At this point, this coming season, we will make it to the halfway point. About 2/3 of the way through the next season, we'll make it to the halfway point. We will eventually round the corner.
Who knows what's coming? Who knows?
Well, you know, we started off with a real bright spot in the beginning of the year.
We did.
A year ago. And then, took some dips.
Peaks,
then
peaks
towards
and
the
troughs,
end,
did they say peaks?
Yeah,
and
we kind of moved up. We had a couple of fun, enjoyable films, 4 in a row.
Yeah,
and then we finished it off with this one, and we'll get into that in a second.
This is not going to be pretty, folks.
It's been a wild ride. It's been a fun ride. That the fact that
it has been.
This was almost 2 years in the making.
Yeah, I've had a good time. There's been some surprises. You know, there's been some. Seriously, there's been some disappointments.
And we may have a special episode add-on when we kick off season two.
Maybe.
We'll talk about that more at the end.
Maybe.
Yeah, we may be. You never know. Who knows? But we have some ground to cover in this one. So, before we uncomfortably roll around with our foster sister and get a three-way lap dance, it is time for our...
What you talking about, Willis?
Just the facts, man. Just the facts.
This film was released in 2018, written by Nicholas Aaron Mezzanotto, and directed by Brent Donahue. Starring Cole Hauser, Bruce Willis, Sean Ashmore, Ashton Holmes, Melissa Bellona, Sophia Bush, and Mike Epps, with a running time of 88 minutes. Made on a budget of $10 million and grossing $386,000 at the box office, it holds a 5.3 rating on IMDb and a 0 critics and 31 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes. When his fiancée is kidnapped by human traffickers, Roman and his ex-military brother set out to track her down and save her before it's too late. Lionsgate Premiere and Grindstone Entertainment Group presents Acts of Violence.
Acts Livington.
I've been working on him for 2 years.
You still have clearance for this raid?
10 trafficking victims. We're clear.
So welcome to Clan McGregor.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers. I see you.
Look who crawled out of his cage.
What's up, brother?
Go have fun tonight. I'm gonna go with my girlfriends.
Okay, we'll make sure you're safe.
Cheers. Cheers. One for the bride to be.
What's your emergency?
My sister's been abducted.
I'm gonna do everything I can to try and find her.
What are we gonna do?
We gotta let the cops do their job.
If we don't go looking, she's as good as dead.
Can't go around kicking in doors.
What happened to Mia?
Two guys at the club. They run girls.
You know I can find them.
They're gonna kill me.
Find them and make an example out of them now.
Grab your brother and get in my squad car.
You know this guy? Can you do something about it?
Your boy made a deal with the FBI and pulled out.
I can't touch this.
We can.
24 hours.
We're not losing a member of this family.
I want to know where she is.
Get it off! Get it off now! Wait!
Maybe I should be.
Now, Mr. Willis plays Detective James Avery, a high-ranking police officer in the Cleveland Police Department's Special Victims Unit, who has a real hard-on for busting some sex traffickers.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. Willis actually, in 2018, releases four films. However, only one is a theatrical release, and that is Eli Roth's Death Wish. He was in Death Wish in 2018, the remake.
I'm a fan.
I know you are.
I don't mind admitting it.
I know you are. Well, the original Death Wish...
Well, you know, slightly above average.
Well, the original Death Wish is okay. I know people think it's a classic, but it doesn't get violent, and Charles Bronson doesn't really show up till Death Wish 2, when it takes a whole different turn in that series.
Death Wish 2 is a sleaze masterpiece. The original Death Wish, which we've discussed before,
yeah,
is overrated, actually.
I would agree.
A little bit bland kicks off, but it kicks off a little bit too late. Whereas Death Wish 2 is rape, mayhem, sleaze, ultra-violent.
Just another Friday in the Smith household.
Yeah. Well, these are a few of my favorite things. But no, Death Wish 2 goes all out.
Yes.
You know, all bets are off. And the Eli Roth reimagining, I guess, of the original.
Yeah.
I've got time for, you know... I have a good time with it. It's not perfect, but...
I mean, it doesn't introduce Jeff Goldblum, but hey, what do you know?
It doesn't have the bloom, but it's still, I think, it's a pretty decent little, you know...
Yeah.
Violent action flick, you know? So, I mean, Eli Roth, he's up and down, you know? So, I think it was a much needed... I wouldn't say it was a hit, but it was successful enough, and I think he needed it at the time, to be honest. But yeah, I'm a fan of the Bruce Willis one, more than the Bronson one.
And this is one of the last years. We got one more year in 2019. So obviously we have two more films after this one in his 2018 releases. And then we get to 2019 when it's when we actually hit his last releases in the theater. So we are almost there.
Right.
I think. Season two will be the end of the Willis theatrical releases. And we'll be on that straight downward slope all the way to 26 in a row. So that's where he's at. Now the plot of this movie. Stay with me, folks. I know I've already read it in the little preamble we do, but just in case you missed it, we'll tell you it again. A man's fiance, who is also his foster sister, is kidnapped by local sex traffickers, and the only people who can get them back, of course, are his ex-military brothers. One is a loner, PTSD-suffering poet, and the other is a happily married man who may also have had eyes for his foster sister at one time. Now, with the help of a grizzled cop who has had enough of this shit, they rain down their own form of street justice upon those responsible. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you acts of motherfucking violence.
Woo-hoo.
Now, it was filmed just like First Kill in just barely 2 weeks. This was filmed in 15 days in Cleveland, Ohio. Our last film, First Kill, was also filmed in the Ohio area. So Bruce Willis had like a month's vacation in Ohio and filmed two films.
Well, in his defense, it's also based there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not like they filmed at one place.
No, as I'm saying, at least we've moved out of the South for a while. Like, you know, I feel like we're back in
these... So we're dealing with the Cleveland mafia here, guys, is what we're saying.
Yes.
This is serious business.
This is. And once again, 29 producers. That is what we have, 29 of them. So no stretch or slight there. Now, one of my favorite little quotes I found from this one, because there's not a lot of information on this, not a surprise, but Barbara Vandenberg of the Arizona Republic writes, "The title Acts of Violence has less to do with the storyline of the movie and more to do with what's perpetrated against the audience watching it."
Well, she might not be wrong.
I was like, that needs to be the blurb on the back of the box. If you're buying the physical media, you need Barbara Vandenberg's.
You know what? If I made a movie, I'd be proud to have that on the box.
Look, you want a reaction, right? You want a good or a bad. You don't want a tepid one, you know? Nothing's worse than someone saying, hey, that was okay. That's like a kick in the dick, right? Like,
No.
I'd rather you say, you fucking
this
bomb, you fucking
sucks.
Piece of shit.
That's what I give a fuck.
Your movie doesn't suck. It swallows, my friend, all right? You went past suck right down to swallow, you piece of shit. Once again, it was made on some unbelievable amount of money. So funny thing is this movie is probably, sex trafficking was happening while they're making a movie kind of about sex trafficking. The movie opens with a very cliche, quick character setup of who we're dealing with, but a young boy and a young girl who we assume are brother and sister, or maybe just friends playing, are being chased by bullies. They're running through some, I don't know why their parents have, well, it's probably in the 80s, so this makes much more sense. It's probably set in the 80s, this portion of it. They're playing out in some like abandoned field near a fucking construction site and near some fucking places you wouldn't expect kids to play. They run through a fence and they're being chased. And then just as they make it to their front yard, they're tackled and attacked by these bullies. And then all of a sudden out from the house comes two older brothers who beat the shit out of these bullies. And then dad comes out, who we later find out was also in the military. I'm assuming the writer of this, once again, maybe of the Fabrizio people, Nicholas Aaron Mezzanotto.
Marinara
over here. Directed by Brett Donahue. Who?
Donahue? Who? Brett, D-O-N-O-W-H-O. So yeah. Actually, it is Brett.
Donahue?
Who? Yeah.
As soon as I saw, those
as
names,
soon as
like,
I saw
oh.
that name, I knew we were in trouble.
Oh, yeah. I was like,
that's
oh.
almost like that's almost like Alan Smithy, where they yeah. disowned the movie.
I also knew when I saw Nicholas Aaron Mezzanotto, I was like, oh, this is a Fabrizio. It's one of these guys. We're going to have a. It's going
to
be
Mezzanotto
a
over here. I'd like to change my surname to
Oh,
that.
My God. But so, anyways, you know, it seems like a military thing. So the brothers step up, and then Cole Hauser pops in, and he starts to read a fucking poem. Some guy's reading a poem, or he's reading a poem about military or whatever. And he's, I don't know, he's at the VA. And like, we're supposed to now know that he's like this perturbed vet. All
Which
these movies
really.
Have the same. Doesn't mean that. It's unwilling we know that so that we know that later when he's got all this, which we'll talk about, military grade weapons that he somehow retired with, which doesn't happen.
Yeah, I mean,
they don't send you home from the military with all of this arsenal. I don't
he's
know.
He's got an arsenal big enough to take out an entire city.
Which makes you go like, why are you holding on to this for so long?
But the whole PTSD thing, the whole PTSD thing doesn't even ever really,
no.
He never fucking flips out or anything.
No, as a matter of fact, he's the only one calm in every scenario as they go through this thing, right?
Yeah.
he's calm and cool.
So that guy's played by Cole Hauser. Declan, but Declan with a A, not a, so you know he's just a...
Oh, yeah. Declan with a C is a pussy. Declan with a K means fucking business. You don't
exactly.
fuck with Declan with a K. Declan with a C, you take his girlfriend, he likes a thumb in his ass. That's Declan with a C. Declan with a K.
So Cole Hauser, you know,
he's good. I mean, he plays. We always think Cole Hauser's going to play, though. You know what I mean?
Not an actor with great range, though, let's be fair.
He is, maybe he's like an American Jason Statham, right? Like, when you see him, you go, he's going to be the guy who's tough and gruff. You go, that's what it's going
to be. He could probably do a better British accent than Jason Statham. And Jason Statham is British. So what the fuck? But yeah, so sorry to... So Declan with a K.
Well, the only difference is if we'd put Jason Statham is we would have a little more karate. Like, that's all we would have been missing. Like, this movie doesn't have karate in it because Jason Statham's on it.
Well, theatrical karate.
I'm sorry.
Not
real karate. I know. Yes, I know. Not Jean-Claude Van Damme karate,
yeah,
all right?
Fucking bald ballet is what I call it.
I don't know.
So yeah, Declan with a K is like, you know, he's a fucking fragile...
Yes.
He's a ticking time bomb of fury, is what he is.
For 3 seconds.
For 3 seconds.
Only when he reads his poem. When someone reads his
military when he reads his poem, that's him, like, you know, meditating or.
What sets him off is he reads the poem, and then the guy's surprised that he can read that poem. Then all of a sudden he gets amped up, like, you shouldn't be around vets. And I'm thinking, I'm not really 100% sure what he said that was upsetting you about being around vets. Being surprised that you could write a fucking poem, or that you could write at all, or that you could read? I mean, I don't know what you're upset about. It's kind of like, and then he, like, pushes some papers. You shouldn't be around vets. That was it.
And then
he also can't go out and hang out with people.
But then he does spend the rest of the movie hanging out with people. So
and then we meet the younger brother Roman, who's a fucking EMT, I guess. And then he's got a girlfriend that we then eventually realize is a foster sister.
No. She was nearly
adopted, but she was a foster home. So they kept, so they held on to her or whatever.
So Roman is played by Ashton Holmes, who was actually in, he was in A History of Violence. He played the son in that, and he is horrifically miscast in this.
Oh, he's
ironically
terrible.
Ironically, he was pretty miscast. Well, I wouldn't say he was miscast in A History of Violence, but it was hard to buy when he freaked out and kicked the shit out of the school bully in that. And in this, he's waving guns around. It's just like, it's fucking really hard to swallow, man.
He's a guy when you see him waving the guns when you start ducking because you know he's going to pull the trigger accidentally. He's one of those clowns. He's going to shoot everybody. Yeah. Like, he's
going to
shoot himself, blow his dick off. Yeah. But somehow he's with some woman. I mean, they really, really Lifetime Christmas Valentine movie for the fucking romance. I wish I was to believe that these two are madly in love. And I was like, I don't believe it at all. And then we learned that they were fucking, they're the two young kids from the beginning of the film.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote down domestic douche shenanigans when they were all hanging out because that was horrific.
Was uncomfortable because they walk in the house and I thought this movie was going a different way. They walk in the house and
I know what you were thinking.
Sean Ashmore plays the other brother. He's the middle brother. They show up at, I guess, the parents' house. I guess, obviously, this guy took over his dad's house. And so they show up, and he's got his wife there, and they kind of show up. And then he's, like, getting really, like, handsy with the guys. This is before I realized that, oh, shit, this is, until he says something about, you know, I think it was Cole Hollinger Laser tells us that it's, like, good thing dad didn't adopt you or something like that, so they couldn't marry or something weird. Very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I started to think that. I think maybe peculiar. Mr. Mezzanotto has got a little bit of
issues.
He's working some things out with this film, with his writing here.
But, you know, makes it interesting, I guess, if a little bit.
They stop, like, really playing, like, in front of his wife, and they start rolling around on the ground. I'm thinking, are they going to fuck right there? That's what I thought. I thought, is this going to turn into some kind of weird swinger family? Like, everyone gets a ride with this girl? What's going on? Oh, and then they all have because Cole Hauser comes over later and he's got to drink a beer. Because in America, the only way you know you're depressed and tough is if you drink a beer quietly while you scowl. You got to scowl. Life is hard. It's hard to be a white American man. I drink a beer. All right.
Probably is.
I don't know what he's always just, and she's like, oh, why don't you go out with your brothers? I can't be out there. Some guy's going to say something. I'm going to probably punch him in the face. It's like, well, I don't know. Maybe don't be such a fucking pincushion and be so easily fucking triggered, my man.
What's maybe the guy needs a punch.
So the night in question of all this stuff happens is apparently the night that they're going to have their bachelor and bridal or bachelorette party. So the bachelorette party is going to someplace, I don't know, someplace sketchy a little bit too. But the only people in this bachelor party is Roman and his brother, and they're going to a strip club. And the ease that's with right. which this girl was okay with him going to the strip club. Like, my wife was watching the movie. She got sucked into it.
Well, she doesn't necessarily know.
No, no, she does. She goes, oh, go have fun at the strip club. She says it to him. Go have fun at the strip club. And my wife looked at me, and I was like, she's
that's,
really
that's
pushing
That's true
this.
Love. That's true love. I would expect the same.
But Declan with a K can't go. Because he doesn't like titties that aren't wrapped in the American flag. So no for Declan. He's going to stay home. But we did get some TNA, and you know, it was a decent. We went to a strip club, and this time they actually were stripping, as opposed to a lot of ones we get where they're just only fully clothed, just dancing.
Yeah,
I was
concerned initially when all the strippers had bras on.
And then there's this three-way. Almost, I felt like this was going to turn into some sex, and the guy pulls himself away. The girl mouths off to some guys, and then it looks like the people in her bridal party. I don't think she knows them because apparently they were setting her up to be taken by. Yeah. Setting her up to be taken as sex traffickers, like that was a very big plot hole. And the wife, like I guess they're best friends, but the guy's wife didn't go to that fucking bizarre. Like, the whole thing makes no fucking sense. Yeah, I'm sorry. We should have thought that Mr. Willis does pop up earlier in a pretty decent early scene. You know,
I would actually say, considering what comes after, I would say very decent scene.
Yes.
He's all in. He's in there.
But what's with these B movies lighting things up with really bad gel lights? You know what I mean? Like, they go into this one little place that's supposed to be like a way station for like sex traffickers, and it's lit up like it's a 1980s club. You know, there's like neon lights you can see in the background lighting things up. It's very 80s disco-esque.
It's atmosphere. It's just atmosphere, man.
But they bust in, and they find the one girl dead, and Bruce has been looking for her. And God damn it, he and Danny Glover have had enough of this shit. He's
super fucking pissed at this point.
We're 2 minutes into the film. We're two minutes in, and you can already tell that he and Cole Hauser have had enough of this shit. We're going to write poetry together. Drink beers.
And fuck.
Women, of course. Women, of course. We're not gay. We're American. We're one-blood American men.
No, man, they blatantly want to fuck each other. There's no subtext there. You can tell. They just want to get it on. The bit with Cole Hauser, Grease, and Bruce Willis's bald head. I didn't like that scene. Did I see the director's cut? I don't know.
When they each were giving each other homemade prostate exams, I was a little concerned too. And he's got Hauser bent over the desk.
But no, the beginning action sequence with Bruce Willis
was decent.
It
was a decent one.
He's decent. He's back. You know, you're like, Bruce Willis is in this.
He's in it the whole time. I have very little problems with Mr. Willis in this film. He's serviceable. He gives the gruff. He's supposed to play the gruff, you know, cop who's had enough of the law not working out their way. Like, it's a trope. Standard.
The bureaucracy.
It's fucking full of tropes. Yeah, I don't blame him. He played it the best he could. In my opinion, I had zero qualms with him. He was actually really decent. And actually, some of the acting's not really the problem, except for maybe Roman. The acting's not really the problem in this film for like your main characters. It's just the storyline is just.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying Roman can't act. I'm just saying he's terrifically miscast.
Terribly miscast.
That's not the same. So the chief, you know, human trafficker in this. I mean, unfortunately, that's Mike. Well, no. When I saw Mike Epps' name come up,
yes,
I was like, but he's so wooden in it.
I differ with you.
I think he was too. But what the movie needed was some fucking energy.
Yeah,
I think he would bring.
I think he's supposed to be playing more of the someone who's got their shit together as opposed to this unhinged gangster.
You're absolutely right. But what I'm saying is, he's probably thinking at last I get to be in a serious role. But the movie could have done. With a few ad-libs from him.
Oh, yeah, I know what you mean. I liked Action Mike Epps. I was so glad it was him and not 50 Cent.
No, I get what you're saying, and you're right.
Did you not realize, did you not feel like, what if Mike Epps took those 50 Cent roles, would they have been a little bit better? Like, you said, you go, maybe Mike Epps might not have been.
No,
might have been an actual better addition.
Yeah, but no, I'm just sort of saying, I just felt like it's another one of those humorless movies where a little injection of a couple of ad-libs would have heightened things a little bit.
Yeah.
And he would have been the guy to do it. But I understand him thinking, everyone sees me as he is a stand-up comedian and everything. So this is an opportunity.
Yeah,
no,
I agree. Yeah.
You know, spread his wings a bit. But unfortunately, the film could really have done with some humor.
Well, also, he's got these two jackass.
No, he's solid.
No, but he's got these two main guys, like his henchmen. They're fucking.
The black henchman made me laugh because his hair changed like dramatically from one. I'm sure in the first clip, he's got a buzz cut. And in the second, he's got dreads. And I'm
like,
what
the other one
looked
like me if I shaved my beard down a bit. I was like, who the fuck is this guy trying to be me over here? This piece of shit.
But yeah, so the henchmen are no fucking.
They're
good,
terrible.
Well, they're psychopaths though, so you know.
Well, the white one is the black kid who's a little bit younger. He doesn't seem to be as
Spoiler alert! That's why he gets fucking shot.
It's true, but the moment when they capture in the van, they're unable to close the door. Like, what the fuck's going on? Like, who's hanging?
Well, they pull a horror movie cliche, don't they? Where that's the black guy gets it first. You're just like, no, this isn't the Scream movie.
However, once the black guy told him to shoot him, so it's the black guy who killed him first. I mean, shoots the one who has the girl shoot him. So,
yeah.
A twist. M. Night Shyamalan twist in there for you. You didn't see it coming. That's not on your Bruce Willis bingo card. Black man shoots off the black man first in the film. Whoa, it's a twist. It plays with this bureaucracy in the film where suddenly now, you know, once she's taken, the only people who can find her. And look, I do appreciate in the beginning, like how they start the thing where they kick open the door and that there was something about there was some immediacy to that energy. Like Cole Hauser, like, we've got to do this now. Like, I kind of like they didn't sit around.
I did.
It is something like you feel would happen. And
yeah, we know we got to do it.
Yeah, and they used the phone. Like there was some, that was like maybe the best written moment of the film because it felt realistic. Like you felt like, okay, this was actually thought out. Like this is exactly how you would do it. If you can, their phone's still on and you have that like find my thing or what, you know, whatever tracking app you've got for phones that you own, that they actually use that to try to locate her location. And then they, you know, they go kicking in doors and like, you know, they're trying to save these girls. And of course, you know, they're not going to get shot, but they're going to kill everyone in the room. I mean, if you thought when they opened the door, they were taking a bullet better than the film, listen here, you don't know B movies, my friend. They got to make it. They got to get their butt shit out of these guys. But I appreciated that moment. Although the one thing they, whether it was it was cut or whatever, but they followed the phone there with the van, and then she's not there. So
right.
The thing that doesn't make sense is all you have to do is have the phone still in the van. You know what I mean? Like they left out a huge thing that makes it go, oh, the reason they found this location because that phone, like they forget about all of that. Like even when they get arrested, it's like, yeah, they talk about how they.
Unless she puts the phone, you know, yeah. She leaves the phone in the van.
No, that's what I'm saying. Like when she gets caught, like her phone probably fell out. Like it should have been one of those moments like we drop this bitch off where they drop her off.
Yeah, but the elephant in the room with this whole movie is, What's so special about this girl?
Thank you for saying. I want you to say it first. I don't mean this mean, but normally in a film like this, you like if you join us in 2 weeks when we talk about some Jean-Claude Van Damme movies, the ladies in his films at least are somewhat attractive. Like even though the female leads, look, they're picked for eye candy. They just are. Like I don't make movies, so maybe this is more of a mature movie because she's more of a regular gal. But yeah, like if you're gonna take somebody, yeah, it wasn't one of the ones I would have thought. Yeah, we're gonna kidnap her.
Well, but no, but not only that, but a lot of people died to get this girl. I'm like, just let her die, and we can save the lives of about fucking 50 people. And
is this in Troy?
Like, there's a line in my favorite comedy movie, The Man with Two Brains. One of my favorite comedy movies. There's a line in it where the villain says, the mad scientist says, if a dozen people have to die just so I can save one life, it will have been worth it. And that's like this movie. That's like, there's people dying left and right. And I'm like, who gives a fuck about this girl so much?
Actually, the guy's wife who bites it in a little bit.
Exactly.
She was much more attractive than the other one.
And one of the brothers dies. So it's like,
yeah,
they should have just let her die. I mean, you know, it's not nice, I guess, but purely on a mathematical basis, okay.
Yes, well,
this was not worth it.
Oh my God. No. Yeah, it's a lot with her. And I don't know if I want to blame her as an actress or just the what was written. Then she's kept in that warehouse. Like, why she's also separated makes no sense either.
But that's what I'm saying.
Like, she's separated warehouse below, like, their drug thing. But then she's, like, banging on the door, like, trying to be real. Like, she was just annoying the entire time.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is all these other women are kept together. But she's kept apart from everyone else as if she's somehow...
As if they'd stolen like a model, as if they'd got like, unless I know everything that's coming out of her mouth currently is horrible, but this is a movie about sex trafficking. So if you're going to sex traffic somebody, if that's what they're doing, I do believe there's a tier system. There just is. Look, there just is. That's the way life is. Steve and I know what tier we are in the male system. We know who we are. We're not at the top. We may be clinging to the middle if we're lucky.
I'm a strong five, all right? That's it.
So we're not saying that we're going to be... Look, we're never going to get captured for sex trafficking. No one's ever going to take us and sex traffic us. But it's one thing. I can stand out there naked with a sign, take me, and that's not going to happen. I understand. Yeah. However, if you're... How they treat this woman and how they hide her as if they've stolen, like, Princess Diana type. Like, it really was like they got, like...
Yeah.
Like the president's wife or daughter, or they grab like a highline model, you know, like a Kim Kardashian. They like grab somebody so famous or so unbelievable.
Yeah, like
it'd be like the golden goose of the sex trafficking world.
Like if they were trying to lure someone there, yeah. Or if she had access to millions of dollars, or
yes,
she had some secrets.
Yes,
so she just like yeah.
Is it
like
James Bond's weird wife? That's what they got her.
Yeah,
but it's not. It's Petey down here at the fucking local A&P. He's just fucking the grocer, and he's fucking got some coos he's been banging. That's also his sister, maybe. We don't know.
Oh, so yeah, so the guys go all A-team and decide they've got.
I just want to put this out there for all listeners, especially foreign listeners. And even those of you who may think that when those of us who are veterans retire from the service or leave the service, they do not issue us weapons to take home with us. We do not get to go home and stockpile weapons-grade stuff. And now, this is why it's so cliche. Just by the standard of living that those two gentlemen were in and in Cleveland, two things we can assume. One, life has not been as kind to them since they left the service because... When you go into the military and the only thing you're trained to do is kill, it's not a real usable source when you get back home. So, you know, they probably do some kind of jobs. I'm sure they're good, but they don't make the kind of money to buy the military type of equipment that they have at their disposal. And it's a lot. It is a lot. It's like they were like some of those doomsday preppers. Like they were waiting for the zombie apocalypse to come at any moment to Cleveland. And it's extremely crazy how quickly they were ready to go. Not only that, but if they do have that kind of money, then that's why they're living in Cleveland still, in these like kind of middle class area. But because they're blowing all their money on this whack job equipment that they suddenly need. And I know there's some I know there's some people out there watch this movie who are like, that's exactly why I stockpile weapons. You never know when this scenario is going to be real. It's okay. Okay, G.I. Joe.
So they're all like, let's go fuck this.
Let's do this.
Let's fuck the Cleveland.
Well, even the first night when they kick open the door, they kill a lot of people in there, and the cops let them go because they freed a couple of girls. That's not how that works.
Well, you know, I think they had a calculator, and they're like, you know what?
It was like a Robin Hood thing. You know what? Look, you saved these three honeys.
You killed four guys. You saved six girls. Yeah,
and those girls
are
more attractive than the girl they're trying to find.
Well, you know, I'm not going there.
This. They saved three girls. There were three of them. I'm saying the numbers are even. I'm just saying. You traded one for three. It seems like
that's
a fair
trade. That's why they get let go. It's a fair, you know, it's a fair cop, as we say in the UK. It's a fair cop, Governor. So they go in all fucking A-team styly, blow some people away, save some
coozers,
you know,
as you say, some ladies.
Some coozers over here. And like, yeah, then the cops are like, yeah, we get our calculator. Yeah, it balances out. Off you go.
Good. Yep. We're good. This all checks out.
But she's not, yes, but she wasn't there.
No.
You know, for some inexplicable reason.
And again, that's the thing. They leave that, like, there's no... Oh, they left the phone behind. It's just like the cops don't even ask questions. How did you know she was? How do you know this house is going to be there? There's zero detective work being done by even Bruce Willis's character. He just wants to capture these people. He doesn't know who he wants to capture. He's capturing somebody.
Exactly.
It's like, bring me the usual suspects. Round them all up.
Yeah.
I'm going to arrest somebody. But the interesting thing is as the movie goes, the action gets worse. Like the quality of it. For, you know, the first little raid, good. The house raid was pretty decent. Look, we all know how it's going to turn out. There's no real stakes in any of these films. However, I was surprised when there is a shocking moment, as Steven mentioned, that one of the wives dies. So the middle brother who owns the dad's old house, their house in the beginning of the movie where they're all wrestling as kids and fighting bullies, and then he inappropriately starts to grope and wrestle with his foster sister, fiance, soon-to-be sister-in-law, while his wife is standing there on the porch. They return home, and she's been killed. Like, to me, I was like, okay, I appreciated that moment. That at this point in the film, I was kind of like, I was starting to go, okay, this is... And it's a... Funny thing is, it's a short 88 minutes. Like, it's not a long film. Like, it does have...
It's a merciful.
It has the courtesy to know.
88 minutes. But the funny... I don't know if you noticed this. I'm one of the... When they kick the door in, you know, and find the wife dead, her eyes are wide open. But then in every other scene, they're closed. So I'm like, maybe she was still alive and you stood around fucking arguing with each other. And in the process, she was taking her last breaths, you fucking idiots. That was a little bit jarring and a little bit odd. But that was like an oh shit moment where, oh fuck.
But it led to that warehouse thing where they free her, which was the worst of the action scene. Well... I don't know, the two in a row.
Well, the funny thing was when they break into that warehouse and start fucking killing everyone, that's like they've done some sort of, they had the blueprint.
Yes,
for the building,
exactly, because they're in the building already.
They kicked it.
They're just already there.
They know every nook and cranny of the building. They're like, fuck it.
But
like,
then Cole Hauser's walking with their police, which doesn't stop bullets, by the way. That
which is hilarious.
It's a riot shield. And he's just standing there. You can see the guy standing there, and he just points a gun, and they're like told to fall down. Like, bang, you fall down. It's just, it was such a jackass. It must have been like, they're like, we only got another 3 hours left to film this. Just do this now.
Just before that, they get hold of the henchman who didn't get shot. Who looks like not. And they tie him to a fence and strap him with C4.
And they stop it with 1 second to go. Whew. Right in time.
But the 40 seconds lasts about 3 minutes.
Well, but
not to such an extreme extent.
I know, it's like you got about 30 seconds to live. And then 20 minutes go by, you got 25 seconds. Like, I counted to 2 minutes.
Even he was probably getting a bit bored by then, and he was going to die. He was like, Jesus Christ, this is taking forever.
He's like, hit the button. Just hit the fucking button, please.
Yeah, it's just for fuck's sake. But yeah, anyway, so that's where they find out where the building is.
Were you hoping he was going to blow up, though? Were you hoping they were going to blow up anyways? Right? I thought... Okay, Steve and I are going to get the one thing we keep asking for. Some kind of gory moment where we're like, all right, we got TNA, we got a gory moment. We might be a little bit happy.
I would have settled for a Desperado-style moment where they all walk away and there's an explosion in the background in slow motion. I would have settled for that, but you got nothing.
No.
You got absolutely nothing.
We bring this fuck face with us.
Yeah. So that was disappointing. But that's where we get, that's where they find out where the warehouse is. They bust in. They've obviously done some kind of like
recon that we didn't know
research,
about.
Recon. Yeah, and like the blueprints of the building, and you go in here, I go in there.
Yeah, because he's up top with a sniper rifle.
Of course he is. Yeah,
it was like the usual suspects at the dock. He's fucking Steven fucking what's his name? Yeah. Fucking people.
Yeah, the unusual suspects in this case. But yeah, so they go in there, all hell breaks loose, and they're just totally the medic. Is suddenly fucking John Rambo. He's just like, what the fuck is going on?
And his Cole wife Hauser is also just, John Rambo, because she's kicking Cole herself Hauser out of the box.
Yeah, Cole Hauser is literally RoboCop. He's
impervious to bullets.
Absolutely. He's just like the man. You want him on your team, is what I'm saying.
The fact that he was walking forward with a police riot shield, thinking that, like, he's just a fucking Captain America's going to stop the bullets. That's not... Yeah. I was looking on the TV. Hey, Cole, it's not how that works. You're dead, man. Yeah.
And, of course, these guys are so fucking useless that by the time they get there and kill everyone, the girl's got so bored, she fucking escaped herself. So she's still gone. They still can't find
it. It's unreal. And then when they finally do eventually save her and they return to the home, of course, they know where she lives. Well, because I guess they killed the wife. And then they go there and they do some kind of like, I don't know, some shoot up the house thing. And it's awful.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Because at that moment where they're at the house and they think everything's hunky-dory, yeah? And then suddenly Mike Epps and his fucking
crew,
Rent-A-Thugs, show
Mike Epps and the Cleveland Browns show up.
the fucking Ohio mob show up, yeah? Right, and start fucking... The bullet parade starts.
Yeah.
And suddenly these guys are finally in trouble. Did you not want Bruce Willis to show up?
I did. I thought this was going to happen. I knew we were losing a brother. I knew we were losing the guy. I knew that once his wife was dead, I was like, all right, they got to take him out. That's going to make everyone feel okay. Because if he dies, everyone's mind goes, can be with his wife again. You're assuming there's a heaven. But anyways, we'll get past that moment, right? There may just be blackness. So once again, boom, he's into the blackness forever. Anywho, so we know he's going. We know he's dying. We know everyone else
inevitable.
Is living. Because Cole Hauser's got another poem to write, all right? Because he's
so
got more poetry.
To live, so this chick gets to live.
But I did think that maybe coming up behind him in that sweet blue car of his might be like Bruce, like, you know, drive by. I don't know, something. I was hoping.
Yeah, I just thought Bruce was going to show up and start fucking kicking ass. And that was going to finally sort of give us
I'm starting to realize that in these movies, Bruce Willis gets one action, which... Lately has been nice because before in our early movies, he didn't do the action.
He didn't get any.
No, he just talked
no
a lot.
No action.
Yeah. And then lately he's been allowed to kill quite a few people, which has been nice. But it feels like it's in his contract. I do one a movie. You pick your spots. You know what I mean? Like first kill, it's at the end. In this movie, it's at the beginning. Get your shots.
That's true. Well, not strictly true, but
you know what I mean? Yes. Like his full on scenes.
But yeah, so we're hoping like, you know, they're going to be under fire and they're going to be outmanned and outgunned. And suddenly Bruce is going to show up in some kind of Humvee or something, smack into the bad guy and come out with guns blazing, you know, Invasion USA style with a couple of Uzis like Chuck Norris or something. But we didn't get nothing.
We got none of that.
Nada.
Nothing of that.
So, yeah, it's sort of a bit of a...
Yeah.
I hate to use the word meh, but the ending is very meh.
Did you notice this? And it's in a couple of still shots you can see online. So if anyone wants to look up some of the pictures from this film. But Bruce Willis does get an assassin. It gets basically this person also liked The Departed and wrote a Departed ending for this movie, if you know what I'm talking about. Right? Is it not it's not The Departed? Right? It's literally The Departed ending without it being in The Departed. Because he quits too. He quits the police force as well. He's done with the shit. And he goes and takes...
This is my badge, you
This
fucks.
Is him. He just goes to Death Wish. Holy shit. This is a prequel to Death Wish. We didn't even know it. His character...
He's a surgeon in Death Wish.
Listen, you don't know he wasn't a surgeon pre. He could have been a military surgeon. He goes...
In his 50s, he felt like, I need a career change. I'm going to become a neurosurgeon or something.
He was a neurosurgeon. He'd had enough of that shit. And he's like, you know what? I want to save real lives. I want to take lives. If I'm going to take lives on the operating table, I want to take them in real life. And then he's like, you know what? I'm done with this. I'm going to go back to surgery. And then he had the machino and Garotha 3. He's like, just want to take them out. They won't be back.
We'll be back in. If only.
This movie did come out before Death Wish.
So he injures a bunch of people so that when he becomes a surgeon again, he's got plenty of work to do.
Do you notice like he did this weird thing with his face? Like he like almost like looked like he just sucked down a lemon, like his lips were like pursed together. He had like this weird wince of a face going when he shot them in this movie.
I think he had some bad wind or something, you know? He's just...
I'm just saying, it was just a weird, I noticed it twice. A couple times when he fired the gun, I was like, did he pull something? Like, did pulling the fake gun, did he pull a muscle? Like he just had this weird wince.
I've got to admit, I didn't notice that. So we'll
I'm gonna send you a photo later.
I'm not gonna watch it again.
No, I'll just send you the still up and you'll see him.
You mean when he shoots the bad guy at the end?
When he shoots the bad, yeah, he does it twice.
Well, I'll have to look. I didn't notice.
Yeah, I'll send you a photo. It's online. Yeah. So I wasn't sure if you saw that or not.
I know you like to go through the whole cinematography.
Yeah, oh yes, yes. No, I make sure. Yeah. Hey, the color grading was fine.
You're an artist.
The color grading was fine.
You're an artist. I get that. You're an artist.
The color grading was finally good. It wasn't some color by number.
That must have been a massive sigh of relief for you.
But then I also saw your opening. We got the train. I was like, we're in. Here we go.
Oh, logo a go go.
Here we are. We're ready to go. 37 producers later, this is going to be a gem.
But yeah, the film did make $386,000.
That's a good turnaround. You know, I mean, they really got their money's worth.
In Arabia and Portugal, they got their shit together over there, and they made it $386,000.
You're surprised Arabia, maybe one of the homes of fucking sex trafficking.
Well, you know, I think
enjoyed a film about sex trafficking.
They saw it as a heartwarming family drama.
They saw it as a cautionary tale: how to make sure you don't get caught.
Now this is how you make some cash.
But Bruce was actually in the moments he's in, he's good. He's serviceable. He's believable as the detective. He doesn't die in this film.
Definitely.
You know, so that's a first in a while. You know, some of the films he's been killed off quickly.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he was decent. I mean, I actually enjoyed him. He wasn't the problem. A lot of the acting wasn't the problem.
No,
it's a very A to B plot. We know it's going to happen, but it loses its steam as the film goes. Like, we know it's a B movie. I don't ever go into these movies going, these guys are going to give Oscar performances and we're going to find gems that no one's giving them credit for. No, that's not how I go into them. I go into them going, I'm hoping there's some elements that I'm going to enjoy and we can, you know, have a nice discussion about it. It'll be a fun movie we watch, like the last four we've had.
Absolutely.
This started decent. You're like, oh, we got Bruce doing a kick down the door.
We were off to a good start, definitely. And then it just kind of...
Yeah, and then they try to save the sister, brother, whatever the ancestral things going on there. Yeah, decent. Yeah, and then it starts to...
Unravel.
it starts to unravel. It does.
But in at the very end of the movie, the bad guy gets away. Bruce Willis throws his badge in and says, go fuck yourself. And then he just does a death wish. Yeah, just fucking shoots the bad guy.
He's Mark Wahlberg in The Departed, kicks open the door.
Well, yeah, one of the few cathartic moments of the whole movie.
Yeah, and it ends and then everyone's... And then they all have this really awful moment of standing in front of the fucking mantle with the...
I take the family picture where everyone... There's only a few of them, though, because to save this one chick, everyone else is fucking dead.
Yeah, they lost two.
Again, it's just like...
Addition by subtraction for this family.
Doesn't that kind of negate the whole movie?
Two people died.
Yeah,
to
the
save
husband
one.
And wife died, but you're still you made it. So you know.
Yeah, the ancestral relationship survived. Hey, everybody's happy.
Keep it in the family over here.
One of my favorite lines, even though it's not going to be in the thing we're talking about, is when it's like, "It's a good thing Dad didn't adopt you after all." It's kind of like, wow, that's kind of a shitty thing to say.
Because I'm going to be fucking...
Because, like, she goes, after something happened, she goes out into the garage to pout because her and the guy argue with each other. And then he goes out there, remember when we were 13? I'm like, fucking pervert, you fucking rapist. You're like trying to... I think Mezzanotte is a big fan of those stepsister fucking pornos. I think what he's a big fan of.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I got to go do some laundry.
Oh.
Whoa. Oh, God. You're gorgeous. Mm. And she's feisty, too.
Somebody shut her up.
Shut up!
I haven't seen her before.
Where did you get her?
Oh, we picked her up from the White Horse Club.
The White Horse? Why would you pick someone up from there? Huh?
Look, man, you said you need a product.
Yeah, I said I need a product, but not product that's going to blow up the missing person report or the Amber Alert.
It's not as bad as you think, Max, honestly.
You're telling me that the products are dying and the police are raiding my spots whenever the fuck they feel like it? And you idiots are grabbing girls out of local areas in front of fucking cameras?
We picked her up from a blind spot in the alley. No one saw a goddamn thing.
I know how you did it, but you don't do it at all. Okay? Shoot him. Wait, hold on. Max, come on, man. Come on, Max. I'm sorry, man. Max, I'm sorry. You know what? I got something a little bit better. Give me the gun. She's gonna shoot him.
All right, let's jump into our final thoughts on this treasure trove of a film here on the last of season one and our Valentine's Day brotherly sisterly love special. Acts of violence a la romance. So
love conquers all.
Favorite scene. A movie ripe of them. It's like trying to decide what's my favorite child. For me, the scene I liked, I actually thought about it, but it was going to be, I thought the entry when they go after the girl, but because they forgot about the phone and all that, I felt like that fell short for me for that guy. I know it's technicalities, but actually the one that really felt true to me is when Declan with a K, not with a C, Declan's with a C for pussies, Declan's with a K mean business, but Declan with a K when he teaches his brother Roman how to tactically pull his sidearm. So, like, you know, before they're going to do this and they're John Ramboing up A-team style, when he's actually, you know, teaching him, the reason I liked it because it was real. You could tell that whoever did this scene, there was the training. There was some training being done, and it wasn't just like you said. I mean, he does eventually become Rambo, but it's not like they gave him a gun. He's like, I know what to do, John Wick. You know what I mean? he was teaching him, all right, this is what you got to do if we're going to do this. This is how you put the gun. I like that because it really felt grounded and real. And it feels like whoever wrote this, for sure, the writer of this definitely had some kind of military ties. He was in the military or something like that. N.A. Mezzanotte, or he and Donahue? Who? Donahue?
Who?
Maybe one of them was in the military because a lot of military terminology being used and stuff. So because of that, I actually appreciated that scene. I felt like it was the one scene that made sense that didn't have some kind of farcical bullshit. So for me, probably the lamest fucking scene I picked for a season, but it's the one that, it's the only one, I believed. It's the only one I believed in the whole film.
It is Slim Pickens, I'm right.
So what was yours, sir?
Right. My favorite scene is at the beginning of the movie when the guy fucks his sister. No, my favorite bit.
They do a flashback to when they're 13. She's in pigtails.
My favorite bit is at the beginning. When Bruce Willis and his partner, you know, they ramshackle some cops off the street, don't they?
Yes, they do.
So really what I'm saying is that the beginning action sequence with Bruce, unfortunately, it's a bit of a ball tickle because that doesn't end up delivering. Yeah. But, well, no, the scene delivers.
Yes,
that leads you into thinking you're going to get a good movie.
Yes.
It's that good an action sequence where, you know, Bruce is running upstairs shooting at people. Yeah. And then there's a guy hanging off a building and Bruce just smirks and lets him fucking drop.
Yeah, love
that.
And then the girl's like, did you push him? He goes, yeah, well, I pushed him. What? We talking about
it. Although, there's a little yippee-ki-yay moment, isn't there? Because he says sayonara. Yeah. So that's his little yippee-ki-yay for this movie. Because Bruce is kind of maybe thinking this is going to be a new Die Hard.
This goes
to show the problems that are going to arise later. But, so for me, the sayonara, I call it, the sayonara scene where he's fucking fighting the bad guy. The bad guy's hanging on the edge of a building and Bruce Willis just lets him die. That's a badass moment.
I loved it.
Mr. Willis himself. So that's what I'm going for my favorite scene.
Nice. It's a good one. Best one-liner. All right, our best one-liner. And like you said, not a lot of choice stuff in here, to be honest with you.
I'm not even sure what I'm going to say yet.
Well, I'll start it then, because I think it's Max Livingston's, played by Mike Epps. He says, when they're down in the bowels, he says, our clients are into some fucking weird shit, but none are into doing it with dead people. That's my only moment of levity I can find in the film. But he said it so seriously, too, though. Like, it was like, I know it was probably meant for a little bit of a laugh, but it just kind of gets swept under. But I appreciated that little moment, so... It's the best thing I could come up with from, you know, Max Livingston from this movie. Not a lot of choice dialogue. I'm sure shit wasn't going to pick that fucking poem. Either of them. Either of those fucking poems.
No, I'm not. I'm going to go for Brandon, the brother who eventually... Brandon is the brother whose wife...
The handsy brother. Yeah. His wife dies. He dies because he got handsy.
After they've... found his wife dead. Roman says, should you maybe stay behind and you need some time to time to grieve. And Brannon says, I haven't got fucking time to grieve. So it's kind of like his Jesse Ventura, I ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah. Well, you got time to duck?
But then he dies. So maybe you should agree. There's
right then.
Take as time. Yeah, as he says it,
wouldn't
he gets
it be great
there.
To have time to do... Down the hook.
But really, that, there's such slim pickings where dialogue is concerned. When he said it, I kind of thought, oh, that's his Jesse Ventura moment. Yeah. So. But he does die, so maybe take time to grieve, people. Take time to grieve.
Best performance.
That brings us to our best performance. And now I'm sure myself and Mr. Smith will differ a little bit, but I actually thought the best performance was Mike Epps because he's normally a stand-up comedian and we know him from all these funny roles. And I actually really liked him as the bad guy. Normally we get 50 Cent in this role and 50 Cent can't act his way out of a fucking wet paper bag. I'm sorry. He just can't do it. He's awful. But Mike I actually thought was good. And I think what unfortunately may kind of push people to the opposite side is because he's got these two henchmen who are just fucking slapdicks. They are just fucking slapdick weasel fuckers who just... you're just like, you want them to die the entire time. So I like Mike. I think his other henchman he had, I think that would have been better if it was just Mike and this other henchman. We got rid of the other two fucks. It would have been a lot better movie. We didn't need those two guys. It would have been better with Mike and the other guy. They were more believable. They were like more menacing than the two fuckwads that we had in this film.
This is true.
It would have been better if after they kidnapped them, they killed them both, and then we moved on with Mike and the other guy. But that's not what happened in this film. But I actually really enjoyed Mike Epps in this performance. And when I came into it, said Mike Epps is in, I thought, oh, shit. It's another 50 Cent, but I was sorely mistaken, and I thought Mike really put in a really good performance. So, on par. So, good job.
I get that. I'm, you know, you're right. And like I say, it was just for me. I was like, oh, if anyone could have...
Oh, I know. Less some levity?
It would have been him.
Yeah.
But I get that he's like, no, everyone thinks I'm just a wisecracker. I'm going to come into this and be kind of stern.
I think it would be hard to believe him being the leader of a sex trafficking organization if all he's doing is like Eddie Murphy jokes. You know what I mean? Just like, oh, Diddy's on her. You'd have been like, Jesus
No,
Christ.
You're right. But I just thought, there might be some, he might come up, but he might be, come on, an Alan Rickman, Robin Hood type villain. He says something. Sadistic shit or something. Even. Yeah. But no, I get where you're coming from. Again, slim pickings with who's decent in this. And he certainly is.
The performances are just kind of like, you're expecting some of the performances we get from the people, right? Like, it's hard to get surprised. And the reason I picked Mike is because of his background. We know him from like Friday and all those other movies. And you're like, oh, he's always the funny guy. Maybe he was like, look, I don't want to fucking say funny lines. Like, I want to be seen as I can also be a serious actor if necessary.
That's totally where he was going with it.
Yeah, and he does a great job, So, you're right. It could have been one little, like even a little something. Like, even when he just did
the line you said, just a bit more
extra, yeah.
Yeah, but you're right. I get it, totally. So, I've had to do a lot of soul searching here because it's not a lot to choose from.
Just throw a dart at the board and see who gets the name.
Bruce Willis.
Yeah, he was going to be my second choice, but I felt like...
Yeah, I know. Well, I think with Bruce in this, he is peppered throughout the film, isn't he? He's in the film.
Yes, he is.
A legit co-star.
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm.
In this film. So that was nice to see. It was nice to see him beat the shit out of someone.
Yeah.
Nice to see him be a little bit of a sadistic cop and let the guy fucking fall to his death. And then at the end, when he hands his badge in and he walks away flipping the bird.
Yeah.
That was great. And then when he fucking whacks the bad guy at the end after he handed his badge in, that was a little bit kind of badass. And it was just nice to see Bruce doing that again. And, they're like them little reminders of why he's Bruce Willis.
Yeah, agreed.
Because in a lot of these films, that didn't have to be Bruce Willis.
Mm-hmm.
Like some of them roles are interchangeable with, characters are interchangeable. You could have had another actor playing that role.
Oh, agreed.
And that wouldn't have made the film any different.
With this,
you got some Bruce Willis in this. He's probably in like 40% of the movie.
Mm-hmm. He's a decent bit. Yeah.
So, which is, in itself... A rarity. So, for me, the best
performance is Mr. Willis.
Yeah.
Favorite character.
So our favorite character, I am actually going to pick Mr. Willis's character, James Avery. He is the only grounded character that is believable in the film for the most part. He doesn't do any stupid fucking poetry readings. He's not grab-assing his foster sister. He's not doing a whole bunch of dumb things. He pretty much plays it by the book, everything he's doing. He's a very, you know, reliable cop in the film. And like you said, he's actually throwing punches in this movie. He's actually doing some work. We actually get to see, kind of like we did in First Kill. Bruce was good in that, too. He's all over the place. Like, he's actually putting in his performance. He's actually, like, being the character. He's not just, like, in some of the movies, he's just, like, you know, he's sitting there in a chair, and he's saying a few words, and you're like, oh, okay, Bruce was here for 2 days. You know? This one feels like he was on set for maybe more than 2 days, and he got some choice moments. They allowed him, you know, to do a raid. They allowed him to kill the guy at the end. They allowed him to drop off a roof. You know, he gets to do the old-fashioned cop cliche of I'm fucking done, I'm tired of this shit kind of stuff. Like you said, he was fun, and he was the only believable character, because everything else is very far-fetched. Like, very far-fetched. So, for me, James Avery, our special victims unit detective from the Cleveland Police Department, played by Mr. Bruce Willis, is my favorite character. Sir, who's your favorite character? And why is it Declan with 2 Ks? I'm scared of you. It's so extreme.
Actually, there's only 1 K, actually. Okay, so my favorite character is Declan.
Yeah, he is.
Right, so.
Because he's not a pussy with a C. that's the reason. The only reason I picked him is because he had the balls to spell it with a K.
Yeah.
Next question.
So Cole Hauser, he's one of them. He's just one of them actors that I'm always like, this is going to sound like I'm really dissing it. I'm a little bit like, why are you famous? Like, but I know you're Wings Hauser's son, but he was like a Gary Bussey kind of madman. He's one of them actors, and I've always been a little bit like, why are you even famous? You haven't got a lot of range, but I will say this. In this movie, he does look, he is kind of a tough guy.
Well, he plays the part well.
I wouldn't want to get in a fight.
No. You believe he's tough. No, you believe everything about him.
One punch mm-hmm. probably tear my head off.
Yeah, no, yeah. You believe the 100% that he's the guy he's portraying.
If you need a tough badass to lead you into battle, which is inevitably where they find themselves, I buy him.
Yeah.
I buy him as that. He should probably do a lot more moves. I mean, I bet you when Yellowstone came along, he probably banked his fucking lucky stars. He was probably on the trajectory of someone who ends up.
And like, I don't watch that show much, but I think he's kind of like a tough ranch hand anyways. I think he's still playing a bit of a tough ranch hand.
He's the heavy, isn't he? He's the heavy in that, but, you know, he's working with Kevin Costner. He's in the most popular TV show of the last fucking 20 years, probably. Or 10 years at least. So he probably fanged his lucky stars when he got that show, because I could see him slowly edging towards being in movies like this straight-to-video stuff.
Yeah.
I think the time for him to be a leading man in a theatrical release had passed. So Yellowstone would have been a really nice place for him to land.
You got to feel a little bit bad for him because he's a part of the Good Will Hunting crew. So it was Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Casey Affleck, and Cole Hauser were the four guys in the movie. Yeah. And three of those four have gone on to win Oscars, and he's not even
that's not going to happen. But he's
the redheaded stepchild in that film.
But I buy him as a heavy. I buy him as a tough guy. And in this, he's 100%. He is like the ultimate, you know, I'm going to look after everyone. We're going to fucking do this. And he's committed all the way, and I buy his character, you know, like. Yeah, so.
And that's why you have the poster of his poetry on your wall right now that our fans can't
under
see.
Under my pillow, actually. Yeah. I keep.
Reads it every night before he goes to
sleep. Yeah, that's in my prayers every night. So, you know, I like the character. I bought the character as a tough badass. That's probably all he'll ever be.
Well, it's because he had a K. If it was a C, though, we would definitely have had a problem.
It's all about that K.
We wouldn't have believed him.
Not with a C. Never.
He probably came on set.
Been
he's like, we're changing this guy's name. Like, what's wrong? He goes, Declan's with C's a bunch of pussies. Everyone knows.
He showed up on set and he said, I got my own notes, guys.
Number one, you put a K in the fucking name or I'm walking today, you sons of bitches.
And they're like, sure, anything else? He's like, nah.
It's pretty good. Can we make sure he's got an arsenal like the A-team? I want to do an A-team moment. Can we do an A-team moment? They're like, we're going to do it anyways. We got nothing else.
So, yeah, there you go.
The moment of truth.
All right, now, did Mr. Willis drop a deuce or a Bruce in this film? Well, it would be very odd if both of us don't say the same thing.
God.
Considering what we just added for our favorite either performance or character, I do believe that Mr. Willis himself definitely dropped to Bruce. He is, once again, look, I want to make sure we know, because we're getting towards the end here. What I mean by the end, we're getting to the point where he might start mailing some of these in. I'm starting to think that, well, you do 26 in a row, there's no way we're going to get 26 solid performances out of Bruce. And we didn't get 12 solid ones this season. So we already know that he's dropped a couple of deuces. As of right now, from 2017 to 2018, at least the beginning of it, he is actually performing in the films he's in. He's actually either, whether he's been given more to do, or he just wants to be on board more, whatever it may be. Look, he's not putting in a direct-to-the-theater performance. All right, that's not, this isn't Last Boy Scout. This isn't Die Hard. This isn't Hudson Hawk. You know, this isn't those movies where we know him from. But he's also not just sitting there getting a paycheck and just taking a shit on set and just like, yeah, I'm Bruce Willis, and all right, I'll say three lines and walk off. So he's still getting, giving us some performances and still being some of the most enjoyable part of the film. So for me, he dropped a Bruce.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
Mr. Smith, how say thee?
I won't say too much. I pretty much agree with everything you've said in this movie. He's a co-star. He's present in, you know, the best ways possible. And he delivers some action hero goods, you know, and you buy it because you know what he's capable of. And he's got personality, and there's things for him to do in this movie. He's not just there to give it his name. He does stuff. And
he does.
Elevates what is Z-grade material.
Yeah, agreed.
So, yeah, I agree.
He most definitely dropped a Bruce.
Now, is this movie a Bruce or a deuce? I think you all know where we're both probably headed on this one. And the sad thing is it starts promising. Like, it does start promising. Like, again, I wasn't expecting us to have another Marauders experience where, like, we're like, holy shit, this is, wow, this is good. But I also wasn't expecting an Extraction either. So I was figured we're going to fall middle of the road. And we do fall middle of the road, but it's just unremarkable. It really just starts to go into just like complete tropes and cliches, and you don't really care about any of the fucking characters. Like, there's some decent performances, as we said, but I couldn't care less about any of the characters. There was no stakes to it. I didn't give a shit the girl lived or died. I didn't care that the guy's wife got killed, that he got killed. I didn't care if Bruce Willis's character, like, lived or died. Like, none of these characters that I give a shit about. The only merciful thing was 88 minutes long, so it wasn't terrible. It just was like it starts good and then it gets worse. Like, a movie shouldn't start off awesome and not awesome, but with promise and then fucking nosedive. It has like two realistic battle scenes, and then at the end it just says, fuck it, we're gonna, you know, let's just do this willy-nilly style. And you're like, okay. The minute he grabbed the police riot shield, sealed it for me, I was like, okay, now we're not even trying. Like, we're not even trying at this point. So for me, this is a deuce. It's not, you know, the worst films we've seen, but it's just I don't even think we've said anything in here that we go, you know, you should see it for this. If you want to see it for Willis's performance, or you want to see Mike Epps do something different, and you've got 88 minutes, you got nothing else to do, then give it a shot. Feel free. So you can probably find it on Amazon or wherever free and give it a shot. But otherwise, for me, this is just a deuce, and I'll forget about it after we do this episode. Like, I really will forget all about this film. And that's not a good statement. You should have some memorable moments of it. As a matter of fact, I forgot some of the memorable stuff was in the beginning, and I didn't remember, so you told me about it. That's how much you forget about it that quickly.
This film was definitely dropped a deuce.
Mr. Smith, how say you on our final episode of season one, Bruce or deuce for the film?
This is a deuce. I'll be honest with you. While I was watching it, I was thinking, I think I like the setup more because of, I could see it's so predictable. I'm not saying the setup isn't predictable. Don't get me wrong. I think the worst movie is probably the setup.
Extraction's our worst. Don't forget that.
Yes.
One.
Okay,
Bruce Willis as a spy.
Yes, that's right. Okay. But the setup, I liked it more than you.
Yes.
But I totally get why you didn't like it. Yeah. I was just feeling forgiven at that moment.
It was the wintertime last year.
It was the early days, man.
If it was summertime, then my movie might not have made it.
We were feeling good. But I was watching it and I'm thinking I'd rather be watching the setup again.
I was just happy it wasn't Extraction. I guess that's the only shiny.
I actually forgot.
If you want a positive review on the back of the box, it's not Extraction.
I'd actually extracted Extraction from my memory. But just kind of like, you know, if you're going to be Z-grade, be Z-grade, which setup is. This thinks is better than it is, and therefore kind of just endlessly disappoints.
Mm-hmm.
And like you say, if anything, you end on a high note, you know, Don't begin yeah. on one.
yeah.
So much. So yeah, you've pretty much said it all there. But yeah. So what I'm saying is the fact that I thought the fact that I'd rather be watching the setup told me everything.
This film was definitely dropped a deuce.
Well, unfortunately, we're ending the first season on a stinkeroo.
I know, because we climbed. We had some...
Yeah, that would have been nice.
That would have. When we say they're Bruce's, those four, again, we also know that some of it's the journey. Some of it's the journey that gives us a better feeling, that makes a movie we watch. Like, Precious Cargo was the pulled first. Us out, because Extraction yes. was before that. Darn. We had Fire with Fire, The Prince, Vice, and Extraction with the four before that, and you're kind of like, fuck, I mean, we've got a long... I mean, we're not even 10 in. Like, yeah, we've got forever.
We've got problems.
And Precious Cargo is not the world's greatest film, but it's one of those Z-grade movies that actually had fun with itself. And you kind of like had choice moments, had funny lines, ridiculous stuff. Like, I would easily watch that over a lot of those. And then we got the amazing Marauders that surprised us with, oh, Maloney, no baloney, man. And then again, Once Upon a Time in Venice was great. And even last week, First Kill was a decent film. It wasn't, fine. You know, it's not going to win any awards, but it wasn't
Sunday
awful.
Afternoon movie, yeah.
And this one just, there was potential. And I said, we're going to get another First Kill when I started seeing the film. I was like, okay, we're going to enjoy the ride. It's going to be okay. Bruce is going to be in this. It's going to be fine. But it just downfalls from there. So it is disappointing that we end season one with... that, because started with assassination of a high school president, not principal.
Hey.
Then we did Setup, Catch 44, which was probably the most contentious movie between the two of us. Then Fire with Fire, The Prince, Vice, Extraction, Precious Cargo, Marauders, Once Upon a Time in Venice, First Kill, and we close it out here with Acts of Violence. So next month, when we started this podcast a year ago, I don't think we knew, because it was just completely kind of a surprise to both of us. It's also Bruce Willis's birthday month. And just by chance, this is pure coincidence, because of also this being a leap year, that the 29th pushed this a day into when we actually release our episodes. But this next episode will be released on March the 19th, which is also Bruce Willis's actual birthday. So we will be celebrating his... score check, 69th birthday.
Wow.
So his 69th birthday, we have our very first episode of season two, where we will be looking at another gem, but we'll start season two with 2018's Reprisal. But we will also have a special episode added on that will also be released that day, which will be a little bit of his birthday celebration that we're calling the Brucies, as we are going to look back at season one and award some Brucies to some categories that once we're done recording, Steve and I will figure out.
Yeah. I think you're getting a Brucey bonus. That's what we're calling it.
You're getting a Brucey bonus episode with the release of our next episode to start season two, because you have to. I mean, the fact that it's actually releasing on his birthday, 69th over here, you know what I mean? Score check. Just kidding. but anyways, yes. So we will be kicking off season two with our 13th episode, as we will now continue forward in this slog of to reach 40, which we will hit, and I think I figured out somewhere in 2026. I think we hit it in 2026. So we start season three in 2025 some point, and I think the summer of 2026, we will pull this train gratefully into its final conclusion, and we will say adieu to Dropping of Bruce, as this is a one-off podcast. Once we hit 40, that's it, because Mr. Wilson is doing no more.
Nope.
That's that. So when we hit 2023's Assassin, that will be the final film of his career, and we will say goodbye to this podcast and probably start something else.
I don't know that
we're going to look at other people's filmographies. We want to figure something else out, but we still got 2.5 years to go. So we will talk to you in season two as we kick off with a Bruce birthday special bonus episode as well. So join us on Mr. Willis's 69th birthday for the start of season two. And thank you to all of you who listened to us on the Last of the Action Hero Podcast Network for this full year. We hope you will continue this ride for the next 2.5 years. Yes, we too feel your pain as well. So until then,
farewell.
And that will do it for our 12th episode. please feel free to reach out to us on the show's socials, which can be found in the show notes, and tell us what you thought about this film, how you feel about Bruce as an actor, or even to let us know what you think about the show. We'd also greatly appreciate it if you give the show a like, leave us a review, and follow the show on The Last of the Action Heroes Podcast Network, where you can find other amazing podcasts dedicated to such iconic action stars as Stallone, Lundgren, Van Damme, Schwarzenegger, and Seagal. The link to the network can also be found in our show's notes. So won't you please join us again next month as Steve and I kick off Season 2 with our review of Bruce's role in 2018's action thriller, Reprisal, to see if he dropped a deuce or if he dropped a Bruce. Until then.
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.